All right, everybody, welcome to the podcast. This is the second time I've conducted an interview type podcast, and actually I'm here with my good friend Will Grantham.
What's up, everybody? It's good to be here with you guys.
We're doing this podcast from one of our favorite locations.
One of the best locations in the entire world.
I would say so. And location happens to be, we are on the grounds of Talladega Super Speedway, located just outside of Talladega, Alabama. And figured what better of time to make a show. We're at our campsite right now, pretty close to I-20, just off I-20. Enjoying some good cigars. These are Padrones that we're enjoying right now. Fired up the grill earlier, had some burgers. Grantham had some, what was it? It was like a
chicken tenders
that we got at Winn-Dixie.
Trying to continue my weight loss regimen, even though we're here at Talladega enjoying ourselves.
Exactly. So the cool thing about Talladega is that we're actually on a free camping spot, and what it is it's basically, I mean, first come, first serve, and we came out here and just picked our own spot and kind of claimed our territory for the weekend. But no, it's exciting to have you, Will, on the show, and I figured you're pretty much, I mean, when it comes to Clemson football, Panthers football, Hurricanes hockey, I mean, those are kind of your three big things. I figured I might as well ask you if this is a better time to be talking about Clemson football than Michigan State.
Yeah, I would say so.
Fortunately, but I figured I might as well ask you, so far the Tigers are
6-0.
6-0, they're on their bye week.
They're on their bye week. The bye week comes at a very opportune time, exactly halfway through the season. They're 6-0, six games down. Mm-hmm. They got six games to go. You know, every game is important from here on out. Every game from here on out, either an ACC game or against their arch rival, South Carolina. So,
yeah.
After this bye week is, you know, it's a stretch run of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting too, because there's been a little bit of a unique situation this year with Clemson football, from the fact that their starting quarterback from week one is no longer there. He's gone. Kelly Bryant said that he's transferring due to he lost his starting position.
Yeah. Well, you know, every season for every team is every season is unique within itself. But I would have to say that for Clemson this year with the quarterback situation, I would have to say it's a little bit more unique than any football season for any team, be it college or pro, I've ever seen, because, you know, with the new redshirt rule, this is really the first time you saw how a player played the first four games and then, you know, took advantage of the redshirt rule to play the next season or transfer to another school.
So how does that redshirt rule
based on my understanding, the old redshirt rule was if you played one down, one snap. Mm-hmm.
You shred a year of eligibility.
You shred a year of eligibility.
The second you take that snap or line up on the line of scrimmage.
With this new redshirt rule, it allows a player, be it on any team, to play four games. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't have to be the first four games. It can be any four games. Right. You could play the first game. And then and then say you make the college football playoff, play your bowl game and the championship game. So that's three games. But you could still technically redshirt that year.
Okay.
And still have it and still keep that year of eligibility. So it doesn't matter when you play your four games. Uh-huh. It's just if you play four games, you can still take advantage of the redshirt rule.
Okay.
So the reason Kelly Bryant transferred and took advantage of this rule is because he did start the first four games against Furman, Texas A&M, Georgia Southern, and Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
Well, Dabo Swinney, after the Georgia Tech game, after the first four games, he decided that he was going to start Trevor Lawrence, the true freshman five-star quarterback.
Amazing talent.
Amazing talent. He's still raw, still rough, but amazing talent. He decided he was going to start him against Syracuse, their fifth game, which I actually went to. And Kelly Bryant thought it was in his best interest to take advantage of this redshirt rule and transfer to another school next year so he could continue to play, have one more year as a starting quarterback, be it right. elsewhere.
It seemed to me, too, that there was that he, I mean, just kind of the way the media covered it, it almost seems as if it was a big distraction, what you say, to the team, in a way. I mean,
I wouldn't say that it was a big distraction for the team. It certainly was a distraction in the media that, you know, Dabo had to deal with. I don't think Dabo allowed it to trickle down to the team. Because, you know, the team, they take advantage, they all get off social media. They don't post anything on social media, so
right.
they kind of block that out. And that's a player-enforced rule. Everyone always questions why all the Clemson players get off social media at the beginning of the year. They never realize that is a player-enforced rule. The coaches do not mandate that.
Okay.
That rule was started back in the Taj Boyd era, about around 2011, 2012.
Sure.
Where they all just agreed that they're not going to post on social media. They're not going to get on social media.
Okay. That's kind of interesting because I didn't think that was a player type of...
It's completely player-enforced. And, you know, being a big Clemson fan and, I mean, just reading everything I can on the team during the season and in the offseason, I don't really believe that the quarterback controversy was as big a deal as people were making it out to be. But I thought Dabo handled that situation as well as he could have. Because,
mm-hmm.
sure. I mean, with a talent like Trevor Lawrence, you can't just sit him on the bench.
No,
with a talent like that, he's going to find his way onto the field. And, you know, people have different point of views. I'm of the point of view that in the first four games, I don't necessarily know if I agree that Trevor Lawrence deserved to start against Syracuse, but he certainly deserved a lot more playing time than he was getting.
Well, I think the biggest difference from what I've noticed with Trevor Lawrence versus Kelly Bryant is that Lawrence, just his sheer ability to throw the ball downfield, gives Clemson this dynamic that really I don't think they had last season, particularly in the Alabama game,
right?
To win those kinds of, well, I say win those kinds of game, but it's really win the game,
right.
And that is to beat Alabama,
right.
Which is Clemson's goal and Georgia's goal and all the other top 10 teams that really have a chance right now to take down Alabama.
Right, you know, as I've told a lot of people when they ask me my opinion, you know, Clemson, where their program at right now, they're kind of in the same situation where Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State are.
Yeah.
They're in that upper echelon of college football. I would say they're certainly a top five program. Where every season their goal is national. I'm not going to say national championship or bust, but I would say their goal is to win the national championship. You know, for a team like Michigan State, John's favorite team, where he went to school, their goal is, from my point of view, their goal is not win the national championship. Now, while every school would love to win the national championship, schools have to be realistic of what their goals are. And I would say Michigan State is to, you know, win the Big Ten, get to a New Year's Six Bowl, be a fringe playoff team some years.
Uh-huh.
Certainly not this year now.
No.
But for Clemson, where they're at, just where they're at with results, with how their season results are and their recruiting that they've had the past six or seven years, I would definitely say that they're one of those teams that their main goal is to win the national championship.
Cool.
And, you know, as I've always said, you know, dating back to 2007, all the way back to 2007, the national champion has either been Alabama or a team that within the season they won the national championship had to beat Alabama.
Yeah, they're pretty much the benchmark team.
They're pretty much, if you're going to win the national championship, you're going to have to beat Alabama at some point in the season.
Whether it be Auburn.
Whether it be in the regular season, if it's Florida, LSU, or Auburn, or Clemson or Ohio State in the playoff.
Sure.
So, knowing that, and if you watched the Sugar Bowl last year, Alabama was just able to shut down Clemson's offense. Because last year's Clemson's offense was very much run-oriented because of the quarterback play. And they were able to load the box, you know, 7, 8, 9 guys in the box and just dared Kelly Bryant to throw on them,
sure.
knowing that he does not have the ability to do that. Trevor Lawrence, while he's not as athletically gifted as Kelly Bryant. He's not a natural runner like Kelly Bryant is. He is a much more talented thrower. He has the capability to throw the ball on Alabama's defense. I'm not going to say he is. He can throw the ball like Deshaun Watson, because who knows? I mean, it's hard. That's tough, because Watson was a generational talent. But he certainly has the capability.
Sure. Would you say Watson was the best quarterback in Clemson's program history?
Oh, by far. You know, Homer Jordan, quarterback when they won the national championship against Nebraska in 1981 and 1982, that season.
Yeah.
He was certainly a Clemson legend because he won them the national championship. He was quarterback when they won the national championship. You know, Steve Fuller. I mean, they retired the number four because of Steve Fuller.
Right.
He was certainly a great quarterback in Clemson history. And, you know, Taj Boyd, even though he never beat South Carolina as the starting quarterback, he was certainly top three, top four quarterback in Clemson history. But just, you know, Watson, the two seasons that he was the starting quarterback, it's hard to beat. He had Heisman-esque years years.
He seemed to really just dominate. When he went in the huddle, it was his offense. It was
his offense, and with Watson at the helm, Clemson, when the lights shined brighter later in the season, Watson just played better.
Yeah, and that's really what you know, and then that's kind of how I looked at Kirk Cousins during his tenure at Michigan State. He was the same kind of guy. Now, obviously, right. He didn't, you know, win any national championships or anything like that, but like the Outback Bowl against Georgia, some big games. He went undefeated against Michigan. Like, when the spotlight was on, he led his team to victory. And that's what I, hopefully, as kind of an outsider Clemson fan, for me at least, that's something I think and I hope Trevor Lawrence can do.
Right. And then, you know, to tie it back to Trevor Lawrence, I don't know if he has the intangibles that Watson has just yet, just because he is a freshman and he's only started two games.
Yeah.
Only time will tell. And after this season, he's going to have at least two more seasons before he goes to the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's only a freshman. He's still a raw talent, and he's going to develop. He'll develop into a damn good quarterback, I feel like. I certainly hope. But I feel no matter who, if it's Trevor Lawrence or Kelly Bryant, or even for that matter, Chase Bryce, I feel like with the defense Clemson has in the running game, with Travis Etienne and Tavian Feaster and Adam Choice, and even Lynn J. Dixon, another true freshman, with the running game and the defense they have, they're good enough to win the ACC.
Certainly.
They're good enough to make the college football playoff. And if they get a lucky enough draw to where they don't play Alabama in the semifinal, they're good enough to make it to the national championship. But, you know, with Alabama just being on a whole nother level this year with Tua Tagovailoa, their quarterback, I just don't see anyone beating them. I don't see Ohio State with Dwayne Haskins beating them. I don't see Oklahoma with Kyler Murray beating them. I don't see Georgia with Justin Fields or Jake Fromm beating them. And as a Clemson fan, objectively saying, I just don't see them, whether any quarterback. I don't see anyone beating Alabama this year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Alabama and you almost to beat that team, it has to be a perfect, flawless.
It's kind of it has to be kind of like what happened with Auburn last year. You know, Auburn caught them on a perfect week. You know, Alabama in that game against Auburn last year, they were very beat up. They had injuries to key players on the defense, and Auburn just took advantage of it. And then when you saw Alabama come out in the college football playoff against Clemson, all their key guys were back. They had a month off, and they were healthy, and they came out and they dominated.
Yeah,
so I think even this year, even if they have key injuries on the defensive side of the ball, they just have so much firepower on the offensive side of the ball with Tua that it's just the stars are going to have to align, quote unquote, for any team.
Let alone whether it be Clemson, like you say, Oklahoma, Georgia, Ohio State.
And I would love for Clemson to beat Alabama. I mean, you know, I'm not an Alabama hater, quote unquote, as a lot of people are. You know, I respect good football. I love to watch good football. Now, I certainly would like Alabama to, you know, take a step down because they've been on top for so long.
Oh yeah.
But you know, they're reaping the benefits of their hard labor. Good recruiting, good coaching, hardworking players, smart players.
Yeah, they know. I mean, when it comes to recruiting, and I think this is a big thing that Michigan State, for some reason, I don't know why they haven't been able to, but recruiting is so important now, and there's so much good talent that you have to be able to win over these recruits, these five-star, four-star guys, in order to be competitive at this level. And this is what Clemson, and I remember looking at their recruiting when Dabo first came in, and it was really when he first came in, and I'm like, how is Clemson not, you know, where they need to be at? But they keep getting all these guys in, but Dabo, he trusted the process. He's really built like a strong community and just a strong, you know, foundation. And now Clemson is their, you know, their success has been a testament to their recruiting. So is Dabo probably the greatest coach to ever be in college football? Maybe. I mean, I certainly
think he's the best coach in Clemson history.
But I think he's the best recruiter one of the best recruiters in the country. Like,
outside of Nick Saban, I would say the top two recruiters outside of Nick Saban are Urban Meyer at Ohio State and Dabo Sweeney at Clemson.
Yeah,
and I would have to say maybe. Even objectively, but I would have to say that, you know, Sweeney, I would say, is a better recruiter than Urban Meyer, because Urban Meyer has the established brand of Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio State's been around at an elite level for decades.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But Clemson, like, you look 15 years ago, Clemson was no different, you know, than you think, like, just a middle-of-the-road 8-5 team under Tommy Bowden. And I think it's pretty remarkable that Dabo came in here, had that vision, and now Clemson, they're not showing any signs of weakness. And by weakness, I mean an 8-5, 7-6 year.
Right.
Which still is not horrible. I mean, it's still a bowl team, but nothing to the elite level to where they are now.
Right.
So, but...
But my assessment so far, the first six games... you know, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining that, because, you know, Clemson, they're 6-0. I mean, you can't, after six games, you can't have a better record than 6-0, which is what Clemson is. And I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but at the same time, I want to be objective and, you know, say some things about the team that I've come to notice after watching every single game. And just being I'm not going to say a high knowledgeable football fan, but I would say I know a little bit more than
above average. I think our listeners would be fair with that.
I would have to say that, you know, of the first six games, there's been many times where Clemson, they haven't played up to the talent they have. You know, when they went to Texas A&M.
Yeah, that was a close game.
That was a good close game.
Good ball game.
It was a good ball game. If you were just a neutral fan, you probably were sitting there saying, man, this is a good football game.
Oh, yeah.
But if you were sitting there looking at it as a Clemson fan, knowing the talent they have on the team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, they got off to a slow start, but they ended up taking a 21-6 lead in the third quarter. And at the time, I was thinking, you know, okay, this is exactly what I thought was going to happen. They were A&M, because it was such a high-emotion game for them at home, they were going to hang around, but Clemson's talent and just smart football was going to take over. And it started to seem like that was going to happen. But A&M, they just hung around and they just kept fighting. They refused to let up. And I was sitting there watching the game, and I was like, you know, even with Kelly Bryant, even Trevor Lawrence as a quarterback, it didn't matter, because the struggles were on the defensive side of the ball. And I was just like, man, for the returning talent they have on the team, especially that defensive line, I just didn't quite understand, you know, why they were letting this A&M team, while they're a solid football team, they're not on the level that Clemson's at.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get past why they were letting that team hang around. They were lucky to pull that game out.
Yeah, what was the final score? I mean, it was close.
It was 28-26.
Yeah, so, I mean,
I mean, to be if we're being completely honest, with the level that Clemson has recruited at and the level of expectation that Clemson has placed upon themselves, winning that game by 2 points is not good enough.
No.
You need to win that game by 17 points. I know it's on the road at a hostile environment at Kyle Field in College Station. You still need to win that game convincingly.
Certainly. Yeah, I would say so. And really, I think...
And then even moving into the next week against Georgia Southern. Now, I don't want to talk ill about any team, except if you're South Carolina, of course. You know, Georgia Southern, they play good, hard football.
But no, I did watch the...
But again, for that game being in Death Valley, and the talent, and just the talent gap between those two teams, while the final score was 38-7, I'm pretty sure, the fact that they were only up 24-7 at the beginning of the first, the fourth quarter, I'm sorry, only 17 points up on Georgia Southern, I was just sitting there thinking to myself, all I can really think of to myself was, really? Only 17 points?
Yeah, I was thinking that same thing.
And, I find myself, going back to the benchmark of Alabama, I was telling myself, man, if this was Alabama, they'd be up 24-0 in the first 5 minutes. Now, I know that may be a little unfair because of just the, talking about talent gap. The talent gap between Clemson and Alabama is not huge, but it's a relatively sizable amount.
Sure.
And that may be an unfair comparison, but just 24-7 against Georgia Southern in the fourth quarter, I found myself to be saying, really? But they ended up pulling away and winning the game by a substantial margin, which, again, you can't complain about a win because a win is a win.
It is.
And they started to show that they were ready to start dominating teams that they needed to dominate against Georgia Tech because they ended up winning that game, I think, 49-21. But then they come the next week against Syracuse, which, as John pointed out, Syracuse is becoming that team because every team has that one team that gives them fits no matter what, and Syracuse is quickly becoming that team for Clemson. They were able to pull that game out after
whatever reason. Yeah. I still haven't figured out why. But.
They were able to pull that game out mainly thanks to Travis Etienne in that running game. And then last week against Wake Forest, they went up to Winston-Salem and beat them 63-3, put up 470 yards on the ground. So I actually went to that game last week and
tell us about that experience.
That was the first time I've been up to Winston-Salem to see the Demon Deacons play. And while the stadium to me looked like a glorified high school stadium,
what did it hold, like
a high school stadium that you would have seen in Texas, probably 38,000.
Okay.
It's a nice campus, nice area, nice stadium, albeit small. It was a nice stadium, very nice. But half the stadium was Clemson fans.
Right.
But it was a nice stadium. All the Wake Forest fans I encountered were very nice, even though they kind of saw the writing on the wall of what was about to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure they were.
They were all pretty realistic, but nevertheless, they enjoyed themselves and we all had a good time.
Well, it's a good college football Saturday. You can't.
Right. You can't not have a good time.
Exactly.
But Clemson went up there and offensive line took over. Travis Etienne, 3 touchdowns. Lynn J. Dixon, their
remarkable
freshman running back.
That's got to be definitely a school record. And I don't know what the NCAA rushing record is in a single game, but they had to have rivaled it because I haven't seen anything like that really in my lifetime from my recollection. Like 400 yards on the ground, like that is just.
Yeah, I found myself during the game. I stayed for the entire game, and even though. You don't want to run up the score on a team like Wake Forest. Now, you want to run up a score on a team like South Carolina. But against a team like Wake Forest, you want to have a little bit of decency. But I found myself even sitting there saying, I was like, man, come on, boys. Let's put up 500. Let's get the 500,
Mm-hmm.
They almost got there. They got the 471, so that's acceptable. I'll take that.
I would say so.
But, I saw glimpses, and I started to think during that game, okay, this is the Clemson team that I expected coming into the season.
Well, and that's the same team
about
the Georgia Southern. That's something they should have done against that team.
Right, absolutely. And, it was a great performance for them to have going into a bye week that they have this week, especially, getting their rhythm going when they come in next week in Death Valley against a very tough NC State team with that Ryan Finley kid. He's a damn good quarterback. So they're going to have their work cut out for them next week. But so far, through 6 games, there's been some bumps in the road, even though they're 6-0. But I would say overall, over the past 3 weeks, I have seen some significant improvement to where I'm a little bit more comfortable than I was after the Texas A&M game.
I would say so. They're bowl eligible.
Absolutely. And, you know,
they could lose the rest of the games. They're still going to bowl.
They're going to the postseason. That, no one can take that away from them. So that's goal number one. Well, actually, goal number one is to win the opener. And then goal number two is to become bowl eligible. Goal number three is to win your division. Goal number four is to win the conference. And then after that, see where the dominoes fall.
Exactly. So, yeah, overall, Clemson, they, you know, they're looking strong, and I appreciate the insight on the Clemson Tigers.
And the last thing I'll say, you know, kind of going back to the quarterback position, while Trevor Lawrence hasn't, you know, been lining up the stat sheet and the scoreboard like Tua has in Alabama, he has every week I've seen improvements with his pocket presence, his decision-making. You know, he's only throwing for 175 yards a game, 200 yards a game, two touchdowns. You know, it's nothing, it's not world-breaking, but it's efficient quarterback play, and as he becomes more comfortable in the offense, I feel the stats will come.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's a ridiculous talent. And I think that he will, sorry folks, I'm trying to light my cigar here, which, matter of fact, we're smoking two Padrones. Churchill size, they're a little smaller wrap. Pretty good. What do you think so far about
it? I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah, excellent. Padrone, I mean, they're top of the line cigars. But yeah, no, Clemson, they, you know, I think it's really in their hands to kind of figure out the rest of the season for them. But moving on to another favorite sports team of ours that's started out remarkably well, exceeding our expectations, of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Man. Oh, yes.
3-0-1.
Absolutely.
So, I, you know, quite frankly, you told me that they'd be 3-0-1 right now, I would have said that you're smoking something. Did not expect this start. But they, what do you think, Will, about their start? And do you think that this is sustainable? Is it a flash in the pan? What is this Hurricanes? I guess very too early, very premature, but what do you think? I still see them as a 90-point fringe team.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was going to say the same thing. Even though with this hot start, you know, granted, if we're going to be completely honest with ourselves, two of the four games they played against the Rangers and the Canucks, those teams are not going to be playoff teams. Those teams are nowhere close to being playoff teams. Columbus was a good win on the road against a good playoff
nationwide
team.
It's a hard arena to win in.
The Islanders are kind of like the Hurricanes. They're a fringe playoff team. They're kind of in the same boat. They need goaltending. It's all going to come down to their goaltending. And, you know, they took that team to overtime on opening night and got a point. I would love to see them win that game. But even with this good start of 3-0-1 in the first four games, I still find myself saying I would have to say I'm going to stick by my prediction of 87, 88 points, a fringe playoff team. Maybe on the outside looking in, maybe the ninth team in the Eastern Conference. But I certainly hope I'm wrong. I certainly hope they can keep this hot start going. But I feel like once they start playing teams in the Metropolitan, like Pittsburgh, Washington, Columbus
even
the Islanders and the Flyers.
I mean, even if you look in the Atlantic, they're going to have to play them.
Tampa Bay,
times.
Florida, Boston, Toronto.
Jeez.
Once they start getting to the meat of their schedule and they're playing these difficult teams in the East, I feel like they may take a step down. I certainly hope I'm wrong, but I just objectively looking at it, I have a feeling that's going to happen.
Yeah, I would say
If they had better goaltending, I would say, yeah, I could see them being a playoff team, but just
the goaltending,
with Mrazek and Scott Darling and even Curtis McElhaney, no matter who they run with as their number one, you never know what you're going to get day in and day out. Kind of, you know, teams like, you know, with goaltenders like Frederick Anderson with the Leafs and Bobrovsky with the
Holtbys
and, you know, the Vasilevskis and the Matt Murrays, you know what you're going to get from them day in and day.
You're going to get a strong performance.
They may not win every game, but you're going to, day in and day out, you can bank on you're going to get a strong performance, a performance that's going to give your team a chance to win.
Right.
And we certainly saw with Scott Darling last year that that's not the case with him. And the jury's still out with Mrazek, because he's had a tough past couple seasons, but he has shown before that he can handle it. And the Hurricanes, you know, by signing him, are certainly hoping that he can return to form that he had early in his career with the Red Wings.
Yeah.
But even him, you just don't know what you're going to get from it. And just with goaltending being such a crucial position on the ice, that is such a big question mark for me to accept.
Right.
To definitively say this Hurricanes team can make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's the biggest question. But I think one of the biggest answers, and it's a good thing, the play so far from Aho, Teravainen, and even Svechnikov, I mean, especially Aho, I mean, he's just
Ferland.
Ferland's been a good addition. I love what Brendan Moore is doing with the forward core, and they've basically almost gone to just a completely aggressive forecheck, and they're battling for pucks better in the corner. They're really generating more scoring chances. Now, yes, they're taking more minor penalties, but I think that's just a product of playing tougher hockey. But they seem to be like and they showed this in the preseason too, that they seem to be a tougher team to play against. And that's not something that I have ever said about the Hurricanes in the last decade, because they have been, quite frankly, an easy team to play against, because they won't wear you down physically. But now, like, bringing in Michael Ferland, having the Jordan Martinook on the fourth line, and Jordan Staal's kind of been playing the game that he should have been playing his entire career, I think they're a tougher team to play against, wouldn't you say? I mean,
I would certainly agree. I've watched all four games so far, and I would certainly have to say that what I have noticed so far is this Hurricanes team is definitely a tougher team to play against. They play with speed. They play with a chip on their shoulder, I would say. They're certainly taking on the mentality of their head coach, Rod Brind'Amour, because he was that kind of player. He was going to get in there, battle hard, get deep in the corner, get pucks out, work hard so he can get the puck to his playmakers. And I have seen, so far in the first four games, I have seen that mentality wear off on this Hurricanes team.
Yeah, because, I mean, your skill's been seen with Aho, Teravainen, and even Svechnikov, their rookie that they drafted second overall through their draft lottery. You've been able to see this talent really displayed, but at the same time, you're still seeing a physical team, a team that's been physical and tough to play against. So I think that's encouraging, and I think their back end too is, you know, it's been a little inconsistent in some games, but I think overall you look at the talent on their back end, and I feel pretty good. I mean, Dougie Hamilton, Jacob Slavin, Brett Pesce, Van Riemsdyk, Calvin DeHaan has really impressed me so far. So, I mean, I like what they have on the back end. So, I don't know. I mean, I really hope that our predictions are certainly wrong. This team has never
right.
not made the playoffs. I'm just going to go ahead and say the last decade. So we'll see. I mean, you know, it'll be you can't complain, you can't knock their start, you can't knock their leadership so far with Justin Williams and behind the bench with Jeff Daniels and Brendan Moore. So we'll see how the season goes for them. Hopefully good things to come. But while the Hurricanes have games this weekend, we also have the Carolina Panthers going to Maryland face the Washington Redskins. So what do you expect from the Panthers this weekend up in Maryland?
Yeah, you know, the Panthers are, you know, another team that...
Good start, I would say.
A good start, great start, I would say. 3-1 in the NFL after four games, that's getting it done. You certainly, with that one loss coming to Atlanta, you would have liked to see, especially with me going to that game,
and particularly with Atlanta being 1-4.
Yeah, you would certainly have liked to see them win that game, especially with it being a division game, especially against Atlanta.
Yeah.
You can't knock a 3-1 start. Going into the season, I kept saying 7-9, 7-9, 7-9. I didn't really see the talent on this team to be a playoff team. I kind of thought they just kind of got very lucky last year, to be honest, to be 11-5.
There were a lot of games that they...
As I always said, last year I thought that was a 7-9 football team masked as 11-5.
I would agree.
There was many games that they won that they should not have won, in my opinion. But last year's last year, and they did end up going 11-5.
Yeah.
So far through the first four games, they've played two relatively, one bad team in the Giants that they should have won more convincingly. But, you know, a win in the NFL is different than a win in college. A win in the NFL against anyone, even the Browns, is a win. You can't knock that.
No.
Then they had a game against Dallas, who is mediocre at best. Kind of like how Dallas has been ever since the 90s. They won that game. You know, and I'm not going to get hung up on that performance too much because that was the first game of the season. Everyone kind of stumbles out of the gate to a degree. And then they played a really good team in the Bengals, and they won that game. And they played it at the time I thought was a pretty good Atlanta team, and they lost that game. But you know, so far Atlanta's 1-4, excuse me, and it looks like that team, mainly because of injuries on their defensive side of the ball, they're really not that good. They may be a 6-7 win team, but you know, 3-1, and you know, with regards going up to this week, you know, they got a big emotional win last week against the Giants, so I do have a little bit of worry about an emotional letdown, especially going on the road against the Washington Redskins team that, you know, got handled very well against the Saints. I mean, I think the final score was like 43-17 or something.
Yeah, it was a runaway style
game. It was a runaway game, and that team's going to be looking for a bounce back at home against the good Panthers team.
Oh, yeah. They'll have a chip on their shoulder.
They'll have a chip on their shoulder for sure, and I hope the Panthers come out, and they got to start fast, and they got to start often. You know, they got to play fast, and they got to come at the Redskins often.
Sure do.
But I certainly think the Panthers, I think they're a better team. I think they're a more talented team than the Redskins. And I would say that there is no excuse for the Panthers to not go out and win that game. I'm not going to say they got to win this game 43-12 or something. I'm not going to say something like that. But I would like to see them, you know, go up and put 24, maybe 31 points on the Redskins team. But at the end of the day, I don't care if they win by 1 or 17. I just want them to win.
As long as they're 4-0 out of week 6.
Right. And I certainly predict them to win. I would hope they win. I think they will win. And they should win.
Right.
But, you know, in the NFL, it's any given Sunday. You never know. The Redskins could come out and surprise everyone. I certainly hope that doesn't happen. But I would have to say I think the Panthers should win this game.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. Cam's been playing pretty well this season.
Yes, with the addition of Norv Turner.
I think they're starting to finally adapt. Finally, they got some regular season games under their belt. I think Cam's learning, offense is learning. They're starting to evolve. They're starting to become that team that we were hoping. Obviously, it's still a young season, but they're doing a lot better. Under North, because the first couple weeks they just seemed to kind of stumble out of the gate. I mean, you're kind of wondering, like, man, is this Norv Turner offense really, you know, is it really going to be what we thought it would be?
Right. And you know, the evolution really started to take a hold in the Cincinnati game. I went to that game with my friend Corey Griffin.
Yeah.
And I was sitting up there, and you know, this is the game McCaffrey almost had 200 yards rushing. And I started to notice how the offense started to open up a little bit. There started to be a lot more creativity. They started to take advantage of what Cam does well.
Yeah, and they need to. Well, the Panthers really under Mike Shula, they're always a kind of a predictable offense, I would say. You know,
yes.
And I think that's the biggest. You got to keep defenses in the NFL on their toes at all times. And when with guys like Cam McCaffrey and the playmakers they have and the wide receiver core, DJ Moore and punches like
Curtis Samuel.
There's no reason for the Panthers to not be keeping teams on their heels at all times. So you know, I agree with you. I think this is the game the Panthers absolutely need. They should go up there and take care of business. But you know, we'll see come Sunday, and hopefully the Panthers will be 4-1. But it's kind of interesting. We're sitting here at Talladega, and not once have we talked about outside of the intro of the race on Sunday and what's going on around here and what kind of events that we'll be partaking in, and And really, I think the biggest thing tomorrow, we're going to be kind of, we were right next to, I've mentioned the damn randoms before, our listeners know about what those are all about.
Oh, my apologies, everyone. I just knocked the phone off.
My apologies. Can't have that. But no, we'll be going to the damn randoms tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll see a lot of good memorabilia that we'll donate some of our money towards, as always. Yes. And then the race is on Sunday, and really, I think this is, well, this, we're in the middle of the whole NASCAR playoffs, but to be honest with you, I think Grantham, speaking for him as well, that we're kind of here, the racing has certainly taken a massive step down from 10, 15 years ago, from NASCAR when it was really in its prime, so really, we just enjoy the camping, the randoms, and everything that's
it's certainly safe to say that within the past 2 to 3 years of coming to NASCAR races, the racing itself has kind of taken a back burner to just the overall experience. You know, coming out, tailgating, having a good time with good friends, you know, whether it's smoking cigars, drinking liquor, going to the randoms, seeing all the old stuff that we like to see.
Old vintage NASCAR.
You know, just the whole... The racing experience has evolved for us from just going to the race to, you know, it's the whole thing now.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Because when we started going to races together in 2013, I think we went to the Coca-Cola 600, that was mainly just, let's go to the race. Let's watch the race. That was the only thing that we were concerned about.
I mean, we still tailgated, but it was more 75% of our interest was the race. I would have to say now, it's kind of shifted. 75% of our interest is, you know, the camping and the hanging out aspect of it. You know, as we were preparing for our trip down to Talladega this year, Talladega is certainly one of my favorite tracks, and I'm excited for the race. I really am. You know, restrictor plate pack racing is an exciting thing to witness in person.
Oh yeah, fast speeds. I mean, they're tight bumper to bumper.
Fast speeds, bumper to bumper, big wrecks. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I was more excited to come down here. You know, set up the tent, camp out.
Absolutely.
Smoke cigars, grill out some steaks and some burgers.
Heck, even the view of I-20 right here, you got truckers driving down the highway giving us a honk salute. I mean, it does not get better than that, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And even doing this podcast, you know?
Yeah.
I was looking forward to this all week.
Absolutely. So... Yeah, I mean, we'll have a great weekend, and you know what? Matter of fact, I think we should have a follow-up podcast maybe tomorrow night or Sunday. Maybe after Sunday night.
So we can recap the race.
That would be perfect.
Recap the Panthers game.
Yeah, and Hurricanes, we can do that maybe after the Hurricanes game, so that way we'll talk about their two games that they had this weekend, the Panthers game, the race, kind of give you some insight on how our weekend will go, which I can pretty much guarantee it's going to be an amazing weekend, but we'll tell you how amazing. How about that?
Absolutely.
So, Grantham, I think this is a good stopping point right here. I think we've gone about 45 minutes, which is a perfect length, and I appreciate you being on the show. You're our second guest. We had Brendan Spatafora on, was our very first guest on the show. Now you're the second, and hopefully we'll have you back for many more, and I think Sunday will be a good time to do so.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Well said. So, with that being said, I appreciate everybody listening. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Go Spartans. Go Tigers. Hurricanes. Panthers. Pretty much. Yeah, there's teams.
And Ryan Blaney.
There you go. So, those are the guys, teams we want to do well. So, have a good night, everybody. And this is signing off from Talladega. Good night, everyone.